This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, welcome to Talking Devils. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by Manchester United legend Paul Parker and Dave Murphy. Good morning, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, Wayne. Absolutely perfect.
Perfect. Oh, there we go. I'm Dave. Perfect?
Perfectly perfect.
Practically perfect in every way. If you're watching on YouTube or Twitter or Facebook, if you can subscribe, like, share the video, really appreciate that. Retweet or repost on X, as it's now called. Get your comments and questions in. We'll get to as many as we can. If you're watching the replay, feel free to say hello and comment. We do reply. And if you are listening back on the audio podcast, if you can subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform you're listening on, we would very much appreciate that. Vicky says, good morning. Good morning, Vicky. I hope you're doing well. I suppose not. We're not doing well because we're talking about Manchester United losing in the derby. Before we do that, very, very quick reference to the win against Forest in the Cup. At least have something cheery to talk about. And Paul, I mean, you've got to be somewhat happy, right? You know, winning in the last minute in the Cup, it's nothing to turn your nose up against.
No, the added fact to that, though, is that scoring in the last minute helps towards winning the game, so there isn't much to go the way United have been in certain ways. But they stuck in there, and to be perfectly honest, just at the time, it was just two poor teams, to be really honest. I mean, Forest, they haven't stepped forward since they had a change of manager. The chairman, again, was a bit... The owner, I should say, was a bit quick with a hatchet. And yeah, he's gone for a manager who had a really good time when he first came into the Premier League with Wolves, had issues at Wolves, and he's come away, went to Tottenham and was poor, and then went out to Saudi and brings him back from Saudi. So they haven't really changed, and I think he's finding the added problem, as what the previous manager had, too many chefs in the kitchen, and trying to organise and finding a better team. But it was, I mean, at the end of it, I have to say, you know, a win is a win for Manchester United, and that's exactly what it was. And it kind of gives the opportunity to stop what the media are trying to build up, this tidal wave of Liverpool, about something about this quadruple. You know, can you remember the days when doubles weren't even talked about until such time? It was there, but for some unknown reason, the media seem to keep wanting to talk about a quadruple. So that gives the opportunity to play them at home and get near a performance that's kind of equal and then maybe surpass the one they gave at Anfield the last time.
Yeah, no, we did well at Anfield. We'll get to the well, we did our bit for the title race. So we did our bit for the quadruple. Closing down talk of it. A big week in that regard. Just not the way that we'd like it to be. Johnny says, good morning. Hope you're all well. The result was painful. He's talking about yesterday, not Forest, of course. The performance was poor, but that goal, we'll get to that. Good grief. I mean, Dave, I mean, the thing is, like, you win like that against Forest and you have two ways of looking at it, don't you? The first one is that you qualify for the next round that you go through. The second one is, what value can you get from the momentum of a last-minute winner? As it transpires, none. We saw that yesterday. Don't get any momentum from it. But nice to win in that fashion. And I mean, like, you know, if we go all the way and win the Cup, then that last-minute winner is going to be remembered as something that could still be a catalyst for turning Ten Hag's tenure around.
Yeah, I mean, a way to Forest, and we seen on Saturday that Liverpool, you know, went up until the 99th minute. You know, the added FA minute that they were given because we're all on the Jurgen Klopp farewell tour, and we must at all costs make sure that they win. But, you know, winning away at Forest in the Cup, potential banana skin, you know, they beat us in the league quite convincingly. So I thought it was a good result away. I know VAR did its best to try and disallow Casemiro's goal. And, you know, I thought it was a very, I mean, it was no great performance, but in cup games, sometimes you just have to nick that goal. And that's what we got. And I thought it was a good win. I seen it, like I said, as a banana skin going away to Forest. It was always going to be tough, especially in the cup. But it's just, you know, the moment the game's over, then, you know, within 20 minutes, we have, you know, Casemiro's goal being compared against the disallowed goal that Liverpool have for similar situation. It's getting beyond a joke now. They can't talk about Manchester United or talk about Liverpool trying to win things. But that goes to show you, we're still the biggest, the best, and we're still the most relevant club in not only in the Premier League, but in the world. That's my unbiased opinion. But no, it was a good result. I thought it was a good result. It wasn't a great game. To nick it in the last minute, I mean, that's what Manchester United do, don't we? Unfortunately, the previous, you know, five days earlier, we had that done to us. So it was always good to get a win. And a home draw against Liverpool, I'm really, really looking forward to that. And on St. Patrick's Day. So hopefully, I'll be coherent by the time the game kicks off. So
that'll make a nice change. Open goal for that one. I mean, you are right. I mean, obviously we're biased, we'll talk about it in like those kind of terms forever, that United are the biggest club and they attract all the attention and everything like that. You can't avoid it, because United can't even go to Forest in the FA Cup without these historical comparisons being made every single time. And the thing is, it's Ten Hag's job on the line, and even I'm drawn into it, like thinking, oh yeah, you know, you make the nostalgic connections, and you know, a bouncing ball into the box, a stooping header, you know, everything scored the way that it was and everything like that. Obviously wrong goal, the other side of the pitch, but the comparisons are strong enough, and you start to think that all these things go in hand in hand with the level of attention that's on everything surrounding United all the time, everything. And I do want to talk about the Players Tribune article by Rashford, but I guess we'll start with talking about the game. We can't put it off, because I think there's a really important conversation to be had with the Players Tribune article. But if we just talk about the game quickly, I mean, it starts well enough with Rashford scoring. You could see the relief on his face. You could see that, like, obviously he felt like the article had been a pep talk to himself, and that he'd sort of stood up to that. And he scored. It was an absolute screamer of a goal. I mean, in isolation, it's one of the best goals you're going to see in a derby game. It's just one of the best goals you're going to see. It was a fantastic strike. Before the game, I had done a podcast last week where we were talking about what chances did United have of succeeding. And one of the things, or the thing that I'd thought, there were two things that United had a chance of winning, really, and they would have to soak up a lot of pressure either way. Was either Garnacho getting space behind the left fullback and using his pace, and you're not really going to get a lot of chances of those, or the rarity of Bruno teeing up Rashford and Rashford being clinical. Then you rarely saw that, because you would see Bruno trying something that was too speculative and Rashford being wasteful. You obviously saw that a little bit later on, and I'm sure that wasteful might be a bit harsh on Rashford, but he should have controlled that better. And United had a chance of being 2-0 in front in the first half. Robbie says good morning. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be. Within seconds of Rashford getting through for a second chance like that, I think he underestimates. Perhaps he realizes that he's not as quick as Walker. He knows Walker's going to make a recovery, so he tries to buy the foul. And instead of getting up and racing back, he leaves Lindelof to deal with Foden alone. And it's the only time, really, that he's left him to do that. And Foden scores. Foden then makes mincemeat of Casemiro, really exposes him, runs off him, which wasn't great to see. And, you know, United at that point are chasing shadows, really. They put a lot of effort into defending that. And, you know, you look at it and you think 3-1 is probably... it's definitely fair for the game. The stats look quite horrendous. It wasn't enjoyable watching United take that amount of pressure. But you look at the lineup that United had to start with, missing three of the back four, playing a lot of junior players by the end of it, and that's the situation. Partly on Ten Hag because he brought some of them into it, but partly forced upon him because, you know, that left-hand side could do nothing about that. Evans looked absolutely knackered, and what an amazing performance he put in for like an hour up until that point. I think United did everything that they could be expected to do, but run out of gas in the end and didn't make enough of the attacking breaks that they did have, and they didn't have enough. I mean, yeah, all right, they only had two shots on goal, but they had, or three shots on goal, but they had enough openings to have been in front heavily in that thing. Heavily, maybe three goals up at one point, two goals, certainly they had a chance. But, you know, scoreline doesn't lie. The result is fair. You can't argue with that. A lot of people this morning being critical, saying, you know, blame on the players, blame on Ten Hag. Where do you stand, Paul? Given that we all expected what we were going to see, what do you make of what you saw yesterday?
Well, on the blame side, you know, you have to look at the players. Players are always there. They're the ones who should always come first when it comes to blame, unless there's something ridiculous that a manager's gone and done initially or during. The manager, I still always wonder about Lindelof on the left. I still wonder about that. That's one of, you know, I thought there was going to be a change. I thought he might have just done that, but he didn't. I saw Johnny Evans playing, and it made me feel better that Johnny was playing, and Johnny and Varane, Rafael Varane, I thought they'd done very well. I mean,
yeah.
Varane, when he's on it, he's very good. In quite a few occasions, I heard him shouting as well, demanding players get out. And I can't remember hearing that. It might be the microphones are set up differently, but there was definitely those two. Definitely made a difference in the first half. I thought they were excellent in the first half. And I did say that when Johnny Evans come off, I was worried. When Johnny Evans come off, really worried. And I shouldn't be saying that, to be perfectly honest. Given his age and everything, I shouldn't be saying that. But you look at his performance and, you know, if he was going to give a award to the best centre-half of the season, it would be Johnny Evans, without a shadow of a doubt. But it's great to go and score that goal. And you're not going to see when they slow that down and you look at everything and you isolate everything, you're looking for technique and where he struck the ball from. You turn around and say that was absolutely perfection. The way it went for him. My question after is what we're going to get next? What was he going to deliver next? And it went back to what it was. To be perfectly honest, it was like a threat of running back without actually making contact with anybody. And what summed it up for me, as you mentioned earlier with Marcus Rashford, was the Kyle Walker situation. Everyone knows that Kyle Walker's very, very quick. He knows that. And all he had to do was what a lot of players are doing. When I'm saying a lot of players, I mean players who play for lesser teams. They put their body in the way. They've learned to use their body to try to manipulate referees to give them fouls. And he's allowed Kyle Walker to get close to him, to fall over, and Kyle Walker brushed him on the shoulder, virtually correcting himself as he got close to keep his distance right. He touches him on the shoulder. He throws himself to the floor to gain a foul. Now, if it comes off, everyone will say, well done. If it doesn't come off, people question you, but what you do is, because you know what you're doing, you get up and you sprint straight, but you sprint back and you help your team out. And I've seen it far too often in football so far this season. It's driving me nuts, it is. And I watch players, and all they're doing really, and I'd like to use a different word, but I can't because I'm on here, but they let down their teammates. They're absolutely... Yeah. And if I'm one of those players, I would be looking at him, and he might come in and say, I was fouled before I let go. There's no one who's going to say you were fouled. People were trying to find an excuse for him. Find an excuse for Marcus Rashford to say that was a foul. And it was nowhere near a foul, not in a million years. And that killed it, really. That absolutely killed it. Because it really made it made the job even more difficult, really, when that moment of ill discipline cost Manchester United. Because once it went to 2-1, everybody just, you know, that everyone just went boom. There's no comeback from here. No, and after that, and initially after that, though, City didn't really get going as maybe, I certainly didn't think they got going well. As, you know, there was a different, it was a, still a difference with them. He made the substitutions, and but Foden scores that second goal, and the second goal, wasn't it? And that was it, really. That was time up, really. What was, you know, the question then is, how many more are they going to concede?
Yeah, Dave, I mean, it's a good point, because I mean, when Foden scores a second, I'm thinking, I looked at the clock and I'm thinking, you know, every attack, you know what I mean? And not to be too pessimistic, but just the effort that had been put in by the players, and the fact that it was like Cambuola was in there at that point and Evans had gone, you know, Dalot had shifted over to the left and Lindelof in the middle, and he'd already been run ragged as it was, do you know? It's a tough one, and you know, Paul's right. I mean, on the one hand, you've got the sensational shot from Rashford, and then, yeah, you can't hide from the fact that it's that, just that moment of indiscipline, of just, and it's cruel on him, considering he'd been the one to put us in front, and considering everything that had been talked about in the week. But that is, that's, football doesn't, you know, when something happens like that, that's the truth, right? That's the truth is exposed in the way, in the cruel way that we saw yesterday, and the gulf in the sides was obviously bigger than 3-1. But up until that point, it's difficult. It's difficult to stomach when you can see, when you can trace what that moment meant. Do you know what I mean? When you can see what that moment meant, you think, ah, if only. What did you make of yesterday?
I mean, obviously, I was not too overly optimistic going into the game, but I have seen enough of City this season to know there's times when they're very, very flat, and that was me, you know, being optimistic, hoping that we were going to get a flat City. I mean, they missed chance after chance after chance, and I thought, well, maybe today's the day that City just don't turn up. Rashford scored an absolute worldie. But you know, if we isolate that from his game, because you know it wasn't as if he was trying them all game. He had a very poor performance, in my opinion. He really did. An absolute banger of a goal. We can't deny that. But it's just one of those things that doesn't happen that often. And I really, you know, we saw the good, the bad, and the ugly of Marcus Rashford yesterday. The good in the goal, the bad in the horrendous effort to get Kyle Walker sent off, because that was clearly in his head. Last man, get taken down, he gets sent off. I just don't understand, and Marcus Rashford's not alone in this. I don't understand players when they go down like that. There's a few examples of it in the past couple of weeks where they're clear on goal and they just collapse to the ground. I think it was Jota for Liverpool a few weeks back did the same thing. I mean, is scoring a goal not what, you know, every player wants? Is getting a player sent off and cheating the referee more important these days? That's the way it looks with a lot of players. Their instinct is to go down. It needs to be trained out of them. But, you know, Marcus Rashford had a poor game yesterday. He really did. He had that chance where he just completely missed the ball just after we were 1-0 up. The one that dropped over his head where he was clean through, you know, you can kind of, where he didn't get the header right, they push it in front. You can kind of, you know, I mean, that was just the bounce of the ball. I don't think that was his fault. But I didn't think he did much else after that. Marcus Rashford, in my opinion, was to blame for Foden's goal. As Paul said earlier on, he just didn't track back. He just, you know, he did a Bruno. He fell on the ground and he just started complaining rather than getting up and running after. And then, you know, seconds later, they score. I mean, the interview we did during the week was bizarre. I really thought it was badly timed. It was a bizarre.
Well, let's get on to that in a minute, but just round up on the game first.
Johnny Evans going off was it. You know, someone had popped up there about when Evans went off, the leadership went with him. 100% accurate. Johnny Evans, for me, should be given another year's contract. I'm not saying he starts every week, but we just need someone like him in the dressing room. I think he gets Manchester United still. He loves the club. And when he went off that pitch, I had concerns. And like Paul said earlier on, we shouldn't be sitting here saying, geez, we need to keep Johnny Evans on the pitch. And it's no disrespect to Johnny Evans, but
no, yeah.
I just think as a presence, he has it. He has leadership qualities. One of the few in that whole squad that does have leadership qualities. Although they had most of the possession, they didn't do a hell of a lot with it. But I did fear when we went 2-1 down that here we go, you know, here comes 4-5-6. I kind of half agree with, you know, kind of agree with Ten Hag. I think a performance, I don't think it was terrible, but it was backs against the wall for a lot of it. And we defended very well for the team that literally had its whole back line decimated. I think Onana had a half decent game. There was one or two players that did okay. They really did. But overall, the gulf is still massive. You know, it really is. There was times where they were just knocking that ball around. And we were doing our usual, get the ball, go up the wing, turn around, and then, you know, two passes later, our centre back or our goalkeeper has it. It makes no sense to me at all. Really doesn't. But, you know, going into that game, a little bit optimistic. The scoreline didn't really shock me in the end. I know some supporters are probably happy with the 3-1 scoreline, but I'm not. But, you know, the 3-1 scoreline probably didn't reflect the gulf between the two teams. The Fulham game last week hurt me more than this one. You know, that's two defeats on the bounce now. You know, Villa are winning, Spurs are winning, top four is gone, in my opinion. I think we're too far behind. It's going to be a tough couple of months for Ten Hag to hold on to his job, if I'm being really honest. An FA Cup final, FA Cup win will keep him in a job. I'm not sure anything else will at this point, and I don't want to be too down on the manager, because there's a million different reasons why it's not going right for him, and most of them are not his fault. Some of them are. He's just not had the rub of the green this year. So I feel for him, but an FA Cup final win will keep his job. Anything other than that, I fear for his job, to be honest.
Yeah. A few comments to run through before we get on to the next point. Box said the point that you made it. Both made earlier about Evans with the leadership. Evans went off and so did the leadership now and direction. But he was knackered. He had to come off. You could see he was absolutely exhausted when he came off. The defeats at home to Bournemouth and Fulham are more alarming than City. Patrick, good morning, gents. Good morning, Patrick. Hope you're doing well. He says, I've raised this before, but why are we unable to keep the ball for a sustained sequence? We have players who seem technically sound and yet the ball bounces everywhere. Why? Yeah, there was a point, wasn't there? It was a fact. Even 5 minutes, 30-second spell in the second half where we kept the ball, and it was notable that we kept the ball, which was ridiculous that you actually noticed that we were keeping the ball. Crops says, I'm struggling to see the benefits of keeping Ten Hag. Well, this is a wider conversation, perhaps for later in the day, not for this episode, for us at least. He says, most of these players are the ones that he's bought. I don't think so yesterday. I think actually the ones that he bought yesterday were well, the notable ones are Casemiro and Onana, and I thought that they played all right. You know, I thought the midfield, Manu and Casemiro, I actually think that they did quite well considering the pressure they were under. Robbie says, Dave, you robbed my line, the good, the bad, and the ugly tweet to you. Well, I'm not here to talk about plagiarism. Funk says, two big games left, in my opinion, March the 17th and April the 7th, Liverpool. Yeah, absolutely. this stuff. So let's talk about the Players Tribune article from Rashford in the week. So he writes this thing where he talks about don't doubt my commitment to United. Obviously in response to a lot of criticism that he's had. So he's obviously hearing the criticism. He knows exactly what everyone's saying. And the point is that everyone's saying everything. It's not just one specific thing that people are saying. Everyone's saying everything, and this is part and parcel when you're part of United. I mean, you can lose a game at the weekend and every single player can be persecuted on social media and in the press. Obviously now people don't pick up newspapers as often as they used to do. All the news is instant and it's there right on your phone. People are even sending it to you then tagging you in it, so you can't even avoid it when you log into your social platforms, because people are You know, they're sending it to you, they're tagging you in it, they're making sure that you see it. So life has changed in that regard, to maybe, you know, just when Rashford was starting out as a footballer, in the generation before that, certainly in Paul's day, when you would have actively had to go out and get a newspaper or a journalist would come up to you and say it physically, you were rarely going to get that kind of instant interaction and criticism. You're not going to be force-fed the criticism in the same kind of way. So it's interesting from that landscape to look at that. And also, you've got that for every single footballer. I'm talking about every footballer in the land now as this thing of social media. I mean, even a third division footballer is going to get criticism on social media and they're going to log in to see it on a Sunday morning. So that's an added pressure that they're having to deal with. And then you amplify that by saying that you're a Manchester United player. And I guess when every single, because Rashford's not the only player getting it, every single player in that team, every single one, and I may say Maynou may be the exception, and Hoyland of late may be the exception, but even he has been written off by people I've seen sent onto my timeline. People have written Hoyland off already. Maynou's pretty much the only one who's been safe from any criticism as yet. You know, no one's gone in on him yet. And I'm quite surprised by that. We're 3 months into his fledgling career at the club and he's been sort of safe from that. Maybe he's got 100 days preservation from criticism in his contract or something. But Rashford, anyway, the point is that he makes this, he writes this thing on the Players' Tribune. He talks about his dedication, the fact that he's been at the club since he was 7 or 8, that he'd make 2 bus journeys across town. There were sacrifices that his family made, and that, you know, he loves the club and everything like that. And you could see when he scored on Sunday that obviously the reaction, that there was some kind of connection to it. You know, it meant a lot to him. So maybe there's something in there that, you know, he was trying to do that as a G up to himself. Perhaps he was trying to tell everyone that he don't, you know, like, knowing that he cares is different to every single person. And people are different. You know, humans are different. They show the way that they feel in different ways. And it does raise, like, this wider point, really, about players being human beings. And you talk about whether or not the salary is a justification for everything that they get, you know. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's a wage, and it is a lot. And they do expect to take a lot for it, for everything that they get. And they do get a lot of criticism. They're not safe from it, and he's obviously aware of it. I guess I really don't know the wider point, because I'm not really... Dave, you started talking about whether, you know, it was ill-timed and everything like that. And I mean, yeah, maybe for Rashford in particular, but I'm talking more about footballers in general making this kind of comment and coming out under with the pressures that they're under, especially at United, knowing that every passage of everything is micro-analysed to the point where people, like, there was a guy who made a fail compilation of David De Gea last year, and he was just doing it all the time. He was adding stuff to it all the time. He's like, and he was claiming that he's a United fan, and what are you doing it for? There was no reason to have done it, really. You're just wasting your time. You were literally wasting your time in the hope that you will see that the target of your intention, see what you're doing, and they will feel bad. I mean, it's not worth the investment of the time. And I'm not saying that the criticism is obviously, that's part and parcel of football, but we don't see, because we don't see everything, but there are these people dedicated, similarly dedicated to constant criticism, persecution of these players that we don't see. Now, every week on this podcast, we talk about poor performances, and we you know, Rashford's been a major poor performer this season, mainly because of his big contribution last season. He's been under a lot more scrutiny. So and he's the most high-profile United player because he's paid the most. So, and he's the United's English most high-profile English player. So it's obviously going to be given the highest level of scrutiny, and we don't sort of shy away from that. I'll come to you first, Dave, because you started talking about it. You said that it was ill-timed. I'm talking about human pressures in general and the way that, you know, they have to release it or show it somewhere. I personally thought it was good to see a player come out and do something like that. I guess you see it differently.
I mean, the first thing that we got to remember is salary. Any professional footballer, salary, wages, whatever, shouldn't give anyone, you know, the right to abuse the player just because of the money he's on. I always find that argument very petty and silly. Just because a player earns 300 grand a week doesn't mean you have the right to abuse the player. And you know, I've complained enough times about Marcus Rashford and people like Harry Kane and Onana down the years, but and Onana recently. But as a football supporter, it's part and parcel of watching your team is to moan about your team. You know, that's what football fans are, right? If one day we're up, next day we're down. Trying to keep it positive all the time for something that you've invested so much into, it just doesn't work that way on a human level. It really doesn't. So, but to abuse players and you know, I always found that thing comical last year with that guy doing the David De Gea comic. You know, it was just silly. It was like, hey, how much time are you investing in this? You know, it's silly. But getting back to the article, I just thought it was a bizarre article. I really did. And you know, this is just my opinion. I think Rashford is more concerned about his public profile through the media than anything else. When in fact he should be more concerned about how, you know, the supporters feel about him and how the supporters think that he's not really putting a stint in. And he's not, and he can't deny that. He really isn't. There's so many examples this year of him just strolling around the pitch. I mean, the most recent one was against Luton Town where he was just jogging around the player while the player ran off on him. It was just shockingly bad for a professional footballer to think that that's acceptable. And there's plenty of examples of Marcus Rashford just not caring. That's the body language he gives. So it surprised me in a way that he feels that he's having, because to me it looked like it was a pity party. You know, it was poor me. It was a public image issue is how I felt. And it was basically directed at the media. He feels hard done by the media, you know, and I don't think that's the case. I do believe that there was, you know, especially during COVID, and let's be honest, what he did during COVID was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, he stepped up, he went up against politicians, and I don't think a lot of them liked him because of that, for their own reasons, which they should be embarrassed about. But the point of going back there is because now I think he feels that he's immune, or he should be immune to any constructive criticism. I just felt it was a very, very bizarre article to write in the current situation for a player that is not performing for Manchester United. I mean, if he's banged in 20 goals, I would probably say it's still a little bit of an odd article. But maybe there's grounds for it because you're playing well. But to me, it felt like it was a public image thing. And maybe he's thinking of the next step in his career and he has to hit out now. But I thought it was a very bizarre article to write. I think he feels hard done by the media.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When in fact, if he sat back and he watched, you know, a dozen of his games from this season, he'd realise that we as supporters are very concerned about the effort he puts in and the body language. I mean, the issue in Belfast didn't help. You don't come out and write an article 2 weeks later feeling sorry for yourself that people are having a go at you. When you're doing stuff like that, when you're missing games because you're off, you know, enjoying yourself during the season, And there's other examples of that. And there's plenty of rumors about his late nights at casinos and his nightclubbing. You know, Marcus Rashford needs to understand that as a professional footballer, you have to dedicate yourself for 9-10 months of the year. I know you don't get a lot of time off, but most people don't. I felt it was a very, very bizarre and ill-timed article to write, and I also felt it was a bit of a pity party, and he's not doing it on the pitch, so I think supporters have a right to vent their frustration at him. So.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate considering the nature of the second goal yesterday as well. Foden's equaliser, I mean. Sean says in the comments, Marcus needs to work harder on the pitch. United fans will forgive players for missing chances, but this shopping round with his head down doesn't do him any favours. Paul, I mean, I don't want to go too far on the article with yourself, but I just want to ask very briefly, in summary, because I'm going to ask you a different question. Would you think he was fair to write it, or do you think he should have just said nothing?
Well, the best way to answer anything is what happens on the pitch. Doing an article was totally unnecessary. I'm sure there'd be a few of his teammates would be scratching their head and wondering why the hell have you gone and done that? Because it was about me. It was all about me, yeah, rather than about the team. And that's the problem. He has to remember that football is still a team sport. He's never going to change that. And he seems like he's invested in himself. And it just come across bad. He's supposed to, keep talking about his PR team. I think myself, wow, blimmin' hell. Your PR team should be talking to you and telling you you're about what's happened on the pitch. You only got this opportunity to go and what he got involved in during the lockdown because of what you had done on the pitch. That's the reason why you got that, to go and do that. And in theory, he was used. They've used him to go and do that. It wasn't directly him. No way. It was like he was used as a point, a good person who was that time in the public eye, and he was used. If the club had been in a better place, I mean, in the sense of a manager was able to, or actually made the point of actually managing a player, you would have been told not to do it, to stay away from it and carry on doing what he's doing on the pitch, rather than worrying about doing something off the pitch, which really wasn't him. So now, as mentioned earlier, he's more worried about his profile to the public rather than worried about his club, which he says he's committed to, his teammates and himself.
I think the wider point of or this last generation, this is the question I'm going to come on to you with, actually, about, you know, the United's underachievement in the last sort of like generation. But before Ten Hag came in, and like it goes to the point of what I was saying earlier about, you know, Ten Hag's future and everything like that. But the point is that if any manager's successful, there's going to be a massive turnover of players, whether that's Ten Hag or a successor. There's going to be a massive turnover of players, and the majority of these players won't be there to win a league title. Like, that's just common sense, really, unless there's something hidden in the last 10 years which can get unlocked. But, you know, like, you might have thought that we'd see that more regularly after the Brentford game last season, because obviously, you know, sometimes people say, oh, it's more complicated than this and it's more complicated than that. But the criticism after the Brentford game was last season was that there was nothing from the players. They weren't putting anything in. And then they were made to work hard. And then it made a difference because they beat Liverpool the following week. So some things are simple enough to be tracked like that. So when you see Rashford not covering back yesterday, it's a simple enough conclusion to draw. And those kind of things are there. And what I mean by that, the wider point, sorry to go on another of my little rants, but it's not really a rant, it's just one of my monologues, is that those players have been there for so long that it can feel like it's a personal persecution, that those players are being hung out to dry, because that's all they're seeing. They're seeing the criticism of the team, but the personal criticism comes at them all the time. And I'm not defending that, because obviously, like you said, but the one thing I do agree with both here is that It's better to probably say nothing and just do your talking on the pitch. And yesterday it was there, and then it wasn't there. And that's the critical difference, unfortunately. That's not me criticising him as a player. That's observing the facts of what happened on the pitch and saying, well, that probably cost us. You can't hide from that because that's the result, unfortunately. Ten Hag was very generous to him afterwards because he was saying that he was fouled. But I think privately he will be saying he shouldn't have gone down like that. He will know. That's just a classic manager defence. Yeah. The point I want to make about something, Paul, what I wanted to ask you about is one thing that is real and no one can really doubt is that Rashford has grown up as a United fan. He's been there since he was a young kid. So there's obviously a love for the club. However it's shown, if it's not in his demeanour in terms of working hard on the pitch and stuff like that, or doing those extra sprints to cover, I mean, working hard and defensive work, two different things, but you know what I'm getting at. So if it doesn't manifest itself in the way that supporters want to see it in this generation because of how much we're struggling, he's obviously, he loves the club and it means something to him. Psychologically speaking, it must be difficult for him. This is the highest. I'm talking about Rashford in general, but I'm talking about every player who's grown up at the club now. So just take Rashford out of your mind and just think of every player who's come up through that system at the club. And they're obviously, there's a love for the club there because they've come through it. They know what it means to represent the club. They're still young. They're dealing with the pressure. The highest profile club in the world. They're dealing with all this pressure. Even Manu, the fans are behind him, but like the press was going on him when he made that mistake against West Ham. And it's like, how do you respond from that? And he did respond from that. But no other young player gets that level of scrutiny. No, because they're not at that club. United do get the most scrutiny. They are underachieving. That is a fact. They haven't won the league title for 11 years. They look like they're some way off. Even Ratcliffe was saying it's a few years off. So you know, really, there's no hiding place. You are playing for the club that you love, and you are not one of those great names. You're not in the team that you played in. You're not going to emulate Andrei Kanchelskis and Ryan Giggs as a wide player. You're not going to win league titles. You know what I mean? Do you see where I'm coming from? Like, it's got to be difficult for a player living through that.
I mean, for me, I don't understand it, Wayne. I really don't, and I find it strange how his reaction. He said, you know, he's born and bred and everything, and I've done this, I've done that. It should be a walk in the park for him, in my opinion. A walk in the park for him to go and do it. I've seen Ryan Giggs, and I was around Ryan at 17, but he had done no different. Ryan went on and had an incredible career as a Manchester United player, and everything, the way he handled everything. He laughed off everything. He had a personality. He smiled at things. And then there was Sparky. Sparky come through it. And you go, and when people say to me about Sparky, they say, talk to him, I said, oh, you remember, he's a bit shy. They don't believe me. Sparky's shy. He's that kind of person. But you put him in a football, Mitch, and he'll tackle his grandmother to get the ball back for his team. That's how he was. And I look at players like that, players who had come at a young age, and I saw how much they loved the club. I don't see that in him. I don't see someone who loves the club. His only excuse he's got at the moment is that he's from Wythenshawe, and he can prove that. But I don't see it. I don't think it's invested in his head. I think he's acting like someone who's owed something now because he's from Manchester and he's achieved this for Manchester. Yet he hasn't achieved anything yet as a player. And that's the bit he should be working on. Achieving. All he can do is give everything he's got within himself to try and take the team forward. But the team should. But everything shouldn't be given to him. And that is the problem. It is about him. And he needs to put that to bed because it doesn't work that way, football. And he's going to, the biggest thing he's going to find out at some point, and the harshest thing that will happen to him, maybe in his life, will be his teammates will turn against him if he doesn't start showing them respect. And that's what he needs to do, Wayne. He's not doing enough for the team. And he's not shown enough of how much he loves Manchester United, in my opinion. Writing articles and saying that you do is not going to convince everybody. It's just not going to happen for him, especially when you go and deliver what you did yesterday. That goal gave him the opportunity to go and build something. And then he took his foot off the gas, thinking that he'd already done it. The celebrations showed exactly what he was about as well. Didn't need to go down that line and start that celebration, that whole finger on the head thing again. Start afresh, start new. Yeah. That's what it is now. Go back to basics is normally what a good coach will always say to you. Easy to say, but difficult to deliver.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I'm not really disagreeing with what you're saying there. Dave, on the wider point, away from Rashford, and talk about the youngsters in general, you know, Mark Hughes is a great example, someone who came through a generation of, like, he was right at the back end of that generation of underachievement where all the criticism was being delivered. Like, you know, even through that process of United haven't delivered good young players, you know what I mean? He was the last of that generation. Do you know what I mean? He was the last of the generation of where people were saying that they weren't bringing through anyone. I know, like, I disagree. We were still bringing through quality players who were club legends, you know, like Norman Whiteside was there, but the wider point was that we weren't prolific enough in bringing players like that through. Mark Hughes was the last of that generation. We weren't winning league titles, and he was there right at the end, and we were. And obviously, he's a very different kind of personality, a very different kind of player to Marcus. But the same kind of attitude prevailed because he was there at the end winning those league titles and winning, making history with the club. One of the, regardless of what's happened in his managerial years, certainly of our generation, we absolutely love him as a player. It's difficult. Again, I'm not talking about Marcus in particular. I'm talking about anyone who's come through the system in the last 10 years who've had to deal with this kind of pressure and know that they won't be remembered in the same kind of way. They've got the highest profile of any generation of player. They've got the most accessibility. They've got the most money of any generation. But they know now the penny's dropping with them, that they can't avoid it. They were disliked for such a long period in that period under Rangnick and the latter days under Ole. And it's been a restoration of reputation for some of them. And by and large, that's been successful. But now there's a critical acceptance of knowing that they're not going to be part of a United team that achieves something big. Do you have any sympathy for them in that regard? I'm not from Dave's point, Paul's point as a professional, because I understand that. From your perspective as a supporter, imagine that you had the chance to play for United and it didn't work out that you were George Best dancing around the goalkeeper in the European Cup final. It worked out that you were a player through one of these lean periods of, you know, like a generation of underachievement. It must be difficult to handle that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's even more difficult, you know, over the past 10 years, because the manager's lifespan has got shorter and shorter. Clubs are not patient. Once a new manager comes in, you're starting from scratch right again as a young player. A new manager comes in with pressure on him to actually achieve. Is he going to dip into the academy? Not a chance. Listen, I'm getting paid to win. I've got a big bonus at the end of the season. I'm just going to buy players in. It's probably the most difficult period for any player coming through any club right now to try and get into that team. Sky Sports have been rabbiting on about, you know, that all of a sudden Liverpool have invented, promoting academy players. But let's be honest here. You know, if Liverpool have a fully fit squad, none of those kids are getting in. Not a chance. It's just by default. It's you know, not just at Manchester United, but obviously it's profiled so much more at Manchester United, and it's amplified because of, you know, the great teams we've had down the years, the Busby Babes, you know, obviously the class of 92. You have that massive weight on your shoulders instantly when you come to Manchester United. But as a young player coming through any team now, and I even talk about teams in the Championship, managers are just not taking the risk that they used to, because they don't have enough time to take that risk. That's the problem. And until that gets fixed, the weight of expectation on players at Manchester United coming through is just massive. And unfortunately, you know, we will lose a lot of players that don't get the opportunity to take it to the next level because the managers won't take the risk. If Erik ten Hag moves on this summer, and I'm not saying he will, but I, you know, if he does, and a new coach comes in, he's instantly thinking, give me 300 million. He's not instantly thinking, let me take a look at the guys in the academy. And even throughout the season, I mean, I was only thinking about this the other day when I was watching the game. All of a sudden now, we become a club that brings in players on loan rather than taking players from an academy or taking players from the reserve side. And that's a prime example of how these kids don't have a chance. They really don't. The plan for every player that's at a top club is to get to a point where you even have an appearance somewhere, whether it's in a League Cup or whatever, so you can take that onto the next step of your career, which is downwards if it's a top six club. That's what these players should be doing and should be fighting for. They know that, you know, most of them are not going to get into that team, but they can make a very, very good career for themselves elsewhere. And I think that's what that's their goal nowadays, especially in the top six, even top 10 teams, is to just get your head above water once or twice to get noticed, and then you get picked up by another club. It's just too hard nowadays for these kids. It really is. And, you know, Marcus Rashford, I think, is one of the last that we may see. I know Kobbie Mainoo has come through as well. From the age of 8 to go all the way through we're going to see few and far of those, really are.
No, I get that. I just mean, like, imagine that you've gone through all that, right? Just very briefly, like, before we move on to talk about Everton. Imagine you've gone through all that and then you've developed a career at United where you've made 150 appearances, but it's been through a period like this. Paul's wandered off. He's had enough. But you've been through a period like this where, you know, United aren't winning anything. It must be very, very difficult to handle. Like, personally, you know, you've experienced that. Not saying you've experienced that. If you had experienced that and then you've gone away to another club and your Old Trafford career is left with 150 appearances from, let's say, the last 10 years, it'd be soul destroying.
I don't know whether it will be these days. I'm on that side of the fence where I think a lot of footballers of this generation just see it as a paycheck. I don't think there's any loyalty. I don't think there's any, I don't know. I mean, there's players in the Premier League that are absolutely stealing a living. They really are. And the money that they're getting is astronomical. I just don't think if you come through the system, you played 150 games for Manchester United, and then you move on to, and I don't want to be disrespectful here, but you move on to, say, like, you know, Nottingham Forest or something, and you're earning it, you know, you're earning 50,000-60,000 a week again because of the fact that you play for Manchester. Are you really that bothered that man, you're not playing for Manchester United anymore? I just don't think that desire is there anymore. I think the loyalty in the game is gone. It has. It's evaporated in the last 20 years. Players are not, you know, Van Persie was probably one of the last ones, you know, coming out and saying, you know, his inner child screaming and he wanted to play for Manchester United. You don't see that anymore. You know, players come out nowadays in the press conference with the usual bullshit of, oh yeah, Manchester City was always a team I wanted to play. No, it wasn't. You know, Manchester City was never a team you wanted to play for. But the fact of giving you 300 grand a week has convinced you that that's the team you want to play for. To get back to the point that you were making, I just don't think that the modern day footballer has any loyalty to any club. And they have a loyalty to making a lot of money in a very short career. And we can't begrudge them at that. But I think we need to move away from the fact that, you know, players are loyal now. They're not. You watch in the summer when Mo Salah goes off to Saudi Arabia. And we'll see how much he loved Liverpool then. Because he'd be offered astronomical amount of money and he'd be crazy not to do it. He really would. It's that the human element part of it. It's generational money that he's going to go for. You think he's going to turn around and say, no, I'm going to stay at Liverpool, Klopp's gone, I still love it. It's not the manager, I love the club. Players have no loyalty anymore, unfortunately, Wayne. They really don't.
All right. Well, there you go. Paul had time to go off, do another podcast with someone else. where he got to have a
that
word.
Was talking sense, yeah.
Yeah, and he's back. I'm not going to ask this question. I'm putting it up now, but I'm going to ask you next week, if that's all right. James asks, because it'd be too long an answer and I need to get onto the Everton game. But James asks, what would you have done to a teammate who went on a two-day binge mid-season and missed training? We'll come to that conversation next week. I do want to talk about Everton. Right, so Everton haven't won a game since December. They've drawn a lot of games recently. They lost against Manchester City, and then they lost in cruel fashion against their old manager, David Moyes, at the weekend. Two goals in injury time. Very un-David Moyes-style result. Very Manchester United-style result, either way, at the minute. Winning or losing in the last minute. And they've got a week to dwell on losing a game like that. It's not a Sean Dyche team. You wonder if like his generation has gone now. Like sometimes you see that, like Allardyce when he was towards the end of his cycle, that the magic that he had in constructing a team has kind of gone. Maybe the game's evolved a little bit past what Dyche is famed for doing. So it's not a bad time to be playing a team when you need to pick up some confidence. It's a but then again, we're talking about Manchester United, where anything can happen. what do you reckon we're going to see at Old Trafford next week?
Well, I've given everything, and after being at Old Trafford, a Fulham game, I think I'd rather the game be at Goodison, to be perfectly honest. In certain ways, the way they've been at Old Trafford, you don't know what you're going to get, to be perfectly honest. But they should never have lost against West Ham. I mean, the goalkeeper for West Ham has been man in the match in the last few games, to be perfectly honest. So it was, in a certain way, a typical David Moyes kind of performance. But this time they've managed to score two late goals. And when you get Socek scoring a goal with the outside of his foot, bending it into the keeper's top right-hand corner, you know that you've got a little bit of good fortune with you. But and you're talking about the Sean Dyche, the way it is and the way the game's evolved. I think it's more the way it's about the players.
Yeah.
The way he's managed, it's the players that are changing, excuse me. It's the players that are changing. It's finding it hard because you can't, you know, the way he is and the way he can get into players. And because it may, a bit alluding to what Dave was saying about the inner sanctum of a player's mind and body, those kind of players, they're not that way. I think you have to have a love of the game and maybe even hate your manager in certain ways because he's the way he's reacting, the way he's talking to him, what he's saying. And before, when you had someone like him, I played under, I would say, during my time, three great managers. One of them is blatantly obvious. The other one was Jim Smith. And the other one was Sir Bobby Robson. Jim Smith and the boss were the same they were. They'll tell you exactly how it was. And my way of always to react to it was, I'm going to shove this back where the sun doesn't shine. And then when it materialised that I'd kind of done my job properly, those two were definitely always say well done to you after, even with a little smile in their face, maybe telling themselves it was there, but yeah, you just weren't doing it. That was me. So Bobby Robson was all about, he had a calm manner, very quiet, different to how he first started, I found out, by the way, when he was a manager at Fulham and manager of Ipswich Town. But he's changed, and it's very, the way he talked, and in the end, you felt you owed him something.
Yeah.
And when you didn't deliver for him, you felt even worse because you've let him down. It's like letting down a member of your family. And Sean Dyche is that way, and he's looking for players to respond to what he's doing. And when they go and do it for him, he'll be the first one to hug him after and virtually say to him, I knew you could do it. I told you could do it. And all you do is you want to punch him, but you smile. So that way is definitely going out football. I'm kids saying football, and it's not football. It's what we're calling the top level football. Top level football is becoming like show business now. It's not about being a footballer first. It's about, can I get into that circus ring and show off out there to try and get there and try and get as big as possible. And when you've done it, have you got that drive to push on and go further? I would say no, a lot of them, they haven't got it. So when I say that, when I'm talking, I'm not talking about the players I respect more in the game now are first and second division players and below, because at least I know they're dying for a taste to get to the with the big boys in the big ring and do it there. They're the ones fighting to pay a mortgage, to pay maybe for a car, which they've gone a little bit big on their car to, because they're enjoying the status of being a pro footballer. They want a nice flash car. So every week they're playing for a bonus because they're worried about, are they going to be able to afford that car? But what have they got to play for? You can play for a top club. You don't even have to play. You can sit on a bit touchline. Are you not playing this week? Okay, all right, fine, not a problem. Do a bit of running after the game because I never played? Yeah, okay, all right then. Walk out the stadium, all the players, all the fans right there, signing autographs of him over there. No one even sees you. Are you bothered? No. Go out? Yeah, because you can afford to. Should I go and buy maybe another house? Just while I'm waiting around, not playing? Yeah. Oh, yeah, and contract's up. You're going to go, yeah, go off. Maybe get 70% of what you was getting before. That will do.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. hasn't worked out well for you, has it, really? Well, didn't play a lot of football. Nah, but I got this and I got that. And that's football of today, really. Yeah. Do they want the adulation? They're not really fussed about it. Well, players of my era, maybe 10 to 15 years after my era, we thrive in adulation. And don't let any footballer tell you any different. That's the reason why we ran around the garden celebrating like the people who celebrated when they scored that goal in the FA Cup. We went in the garden. We wanted to score a goal to do that celebration. That was football then. Now they don't go out in the garden. Why bother going in the garden when you can actually do it, sit indoors, stay dry, don't have to get your ass burnt on the concrete or anything like that. Just stay indoors. So football is falling away now. And I know I've changed it slightly, but love of football is dying in a lot of people. They're losing the will to live with top grade football.
Yeah. So that's Paul's thoughts on the Everton game. included a healthy diversion there with
I'm glad Johnny's coming here to help me.
I had to have a laugh at that. People maul Everton 4-0. Dave, I'm gonna I do have to tell this very quick story of it will be a quick one, but Paul talking about Jim Smith made me think of my favourite Jim Smith story. Like Danny Higginbottom told him when Jim was manager of Derby County. And they were playing a game at Old Trafford. United, I think, had already won the league, but Derby needed to win to stay up. Remember when Derby had like the likes of Terebo West in the team? Mm-hmm. So they were staying at Mottram Hall the night before the game, and they had players out. You know, they weren't expecting to win at Old Trafford. You know, like Fergie was going to rotate the team, but they were still going to feel a strong side, and that strong United rotated team in that day and age would have been expected to, you know, hand Derby a bit of an eye in like 4 or 5 goals. So it was kind of like all backs to the wall kind of performance from Derby. And he didn't know what he was going to do, Smith. He had no idea about his approach to the game. And over breakfast, he's having a cup of tea and he looks out of the window. And if anyone's been to Mottram Hall, you know, it's surrounded by a lovely golf course, lots of water there. Nice green lush fields, and he looks out and he sees ducks waddling along in this weird formation shape, and he decides it's like a 3-4-3 duck formation, and he decides this is the formation that we're going to try at Old Trafford, which includes like moving a couple of players in different positions and asking them to do things that they normally wouldn't. And as they're getting onto the team bus, Terebo West's got his Bible and he's rubbing it because he's like deeply religious, going to read it. And everyone's joking about him, saying they're going to need it today. So Jim Smith gets to Old Trafford, tells the players they're going to play in this duck formation. I don't know if you remember the game. They win one. Malcolm Christie scores. United missed a load of chances. And Derby somehow hold on to win the game. Unfortunately, I don't think Ten Hag saw any ducks on Saturday morning when he was preparing for the City game. It might have helped us out. But Everton might be sitting ducks. They've won more points. They've won as many points in their relegation battle by refunds from FFP since Christmas. So they've got a better chance of surviving relegation thanks to points being refunded than they have of their team actually getting points on the pitch. What do you reckon we're going to see on Saturday, Dave-O?
We just don't know. Do we? As Paul said, you just don't know. You know, there's times when you want to just play away from Old Trafford because we play a different style. And I don't know. I mean, everything's going against us, isn't it? They haven't won since December. I mean, Fulham hadn't won away since, I think, the first or second away game of the season. They come to Old Trafford, they win and win convincingly. I just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, everything's going to come and they're going to dig in. You know, we desperately need the points. My fear is we'll get into that part of the season where the Champions League looks completely out of reach. Do the players take their foot off the pedal then and go, well, what's the point? You know, finishing sixth is no different than finishing eighth, you know, at this point, because no one wants the Europa League. So I don't know. We need to get back to winning ways. We've had two league defeats in a row. The FA Cup was nicely snugged in there. Players should be busting a gut to be in that starting 11 to play Liverpool in a couple of weeks' time. I just don't know what team's going to show up at Manchester United on Saturday, unfortunately. You know, it's an early game. Maybe we're better in the morning than we are in the afternoon. But I don't know. I don't know. It's just like watching United over the past couple of years, even when we're 2-0 up, I'm still hiding behind the couch. You know, it's like you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, has there been any good team news in regard to injuries? I believe Mason Mount is on his way back. He could be included. I'm not sure about Hoyland. What a disaster for him, you know, considering the form he was in. I just don't know. When I make predictions about goal scorers, it's normally, you know, it normally goes terribly wrong. So ask me again at three o'clock on Saturday and I'll tell you how we'll do against Everton.
Yeah, good. That's what you come here for, really, that kind of quality analysis. I Paul about the game, and he starts talking about something else completely. Ask Dave, and he tells you to ask him after the game. But you probably still get it wrong. Right. We'll be back next week to talk about it, where we'll get all this quality analysis horribly wrong. If you've enjoyed, if you can like and subscribe on the platform you're listening on. If you've enjoyed listening back on the audio podcast, if you can subscribe on that platform as well and leave a review, we'd very much appreciate it. Thanks for spending your Monday morning with us, guys. We'll be back next week. Stay safe, stay well. Thanks for listening and watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear, and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.